Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Microbiology for Dummies by Julianne C. Kaiser, Ph.D., Jennifer C. Stearns, Ph.D., and Michael G. Surrett, Ph.D., narrated by Susie Alphens. Introduction. The world around us is full of tiny, invisible living things that affect us every day. Diving into the study of that world is what this book is all about, and we're happy that you'd like to come along. Microbiology as a whole can feel overwhelming, but when you break it down into parts, it can be straightforward and even interesting. Whether you're taking a microbiology course for credit or studying microbiology on your own time, we've written this book with you, the beginner, in mind. This book walks you through the tricky concepts in microbiology while covering the forms, functions, and impacts of microbes in nature and on our lives. About this book. Microbiology for Dummies is an overview of the material covered in a typical first-year microbiology course. Some courses cover more medical, molecular, or environmental microbiology than others, so we've included them all here. In this book, you will find clear explanations of the characteristics that microorganisms share, the things that make microbes different from one another and the rest of life on Earth, the processes important to microbial life, the diversity of microbial life, how microbes affect us. With this book, you'll be able to explain what makes microorganisms unique and identify where and how they live. You'll also have the skills to delve into specialized areas of microbiology that this book covers in an introductory way. This book is a reference, which means you don't have to memorize it. Unlike your microbiology course, there is no test at the end. Use it as a reference, dipping into whichever chapter or section has the information you need. Finally, sidebars and sections marked with the technical stuff icons are skippable. They offer a more in-depth discussion of a topic, extra detail, or interesting cases that are related to the main material of the chapter. Foolish assumptions. We don't assume that you have any background knowledge in microbiology except what may be covered in an introductory biology course. In fact, many of the concepts learned in a biology course are also presented here, so we don't expect you to know much of that either. We assume that you are new to microbiology or other science courses where an introduction to microbiology is beneficial. And we've written this book in a way that will provide you with the background you need. The science of microbiology involves knowing a bit of biochemistry, cell biology, molecular biology, and environmental science, so we explain those concepts as needed, but you may like to peruse guides on those topics for a fuller understanding. Other than that, we only assume that you transcend the idea of microorganisms as bad and consider them as important members of our world, especially because they outnumber us about 200 million trillion to one. Icons used in this book. Icons are verbalized in this audiobook. Draw your attention to things that occur on a regular basis. Here's what each icon means. Tip. The tip icon marks material that's useful for thinking about a concept in another way, or helping you to remember something. Remember. The Remember icon highlights concepts that are important to keep in mind. Often, these concepts come up more than once in the book. Warning. The Warning icon points out places where it can be easy to get confused. We usually know this because there is confusion in the general public about the concept, or worse, in the scientific community. Sometimes the warning icon points to areas of debate in microbiology so that you don't have to feel confused if other sources disagree with our explanation. Technical stuff. Non-essential but helpful and interesting information is marked by the technical stuff icon. Beyond the Book. In addition to the material that you're hearing right now, this book also has some useful digital content available on the web. Some facts in microbiology are handy to have at your fingertips, either to study for an exam or to refresh your memory on the spot. Check out the free cheat sheet at dummies.com/cheat sheet/microbiology for tips on identifying microbes, remembering the basic differences between them, and figuring out the naming system used in microbiology. Ever wonder what all the fuss is about fecal transplants, or if the anti-vaccine campaigns are telling you the truth? You can find articles on these topics and more at dummies.com/extras/microbiology. Where to go from here? We'd like to think that you won't skip anything, but if you're taking a microbiology course right now, then you probably don't need an introduction to the topic and can skip part one. Even though each chapter can be listened to on its own, the material in part two is essential to any student of microbiology and will likely be very useful when covering more advanced topics. There are many kinds of microbiology, perspectives from which will shape how introductory biology is taught. For a human health perspective, focus on chapters in part five. For an ecology perspective, you'll likely find chapters in part three useful. No matter where you start or where you end, we hope that you'll come away with an appreciation for microbes and a roadmap for learning microbiology. Part 1. Getting Started with Microbiology. Web Extras. For Dummies, can help you get started with lots of subjects. Visit dummies.com to learn more and do more with For Dummies. In this part, get a big picture view of microbiology, including how microorganisms impact our lives in ways that we can and can't see. Get acquainted with the history of microbiology from before people knew that microbes existed to our current use of sophisticated techniques to study microorganisms. Gain an understanding of the vastness of microbial lifestyles and how microbes are everywhere living in communities. Understand microbial diversity and all the different ways these tiny organisms have figured out to get energy from their environments. Chapter 1. Microbiology and You. In this chapter, seeing the importance of microbiology. Getting to know microorganisms. Listing the tools used to study microbes. When considering the imperceptibly small, it's sometimes easy to lose sight of the big picture. In this chapter, we put the science of microbiology into perspective for you as it relates to human lives, as well as how it fits in with the other sciences. The goal is to give you an idea of the kinds of thinking you'll use throughout the rest of the book. Don't worry. We explain all that pesky biochemistry and molecular biology as it comes up in each chapter. Why microbiology? The question of why to study microbiology is a good one. The impacts of microorganisms on your life may not be immediately obvious. But the truth is, microorganisms not only have a huge impact, but are literally everywhere, covering all the surfaces of your body and in every natural and urban habitat. In nature, microorganisms contribute to biogeochemical cycling, as well as turnover of material in soil and aquatic habitats. Some are important plant symbionts, organisms that live in intimate contact with their host, with mutual benefit for both organisms, whereas others are important pathogens, organisms that cause disease, of both plants and animals. Although not all microorganisms are bad, the treatment and prevention of the diseases caused by bacteria, viruses, protozoa, and fungi have only been possible because of microbiology. Antibiotics were discovered through microbiology, as were vaccines and other therapeutics. Other applications of microorganisms include industries like mining, pharmaceuticals, food and beverages, and genetics. Microorganisms are important model organisms for studying principles of genetics and biochemistry. Many professions require you to learn some microbiology. You may already know this because you're in a micro class as part of the training for one of them. These professions include, but are not limited to, nursing, medicine, clinical laboratory work, pharmaceuticals, brewing and winemaking, environmental engineering. Introducing the microorganisms. So, what are microorganisms exactly? Microorganisms are actually a diverse group of organisms. The fact that they're micro isn't even true of all microorganisms. Some of them form multicellular structures that are easily seen with the naked eye. Remember, there are three main kinds of microorganisms based on evolutionary lines. Bacteria are a large group of unicellular organisms that scientists loosely group as gram-negative and gram-positive. But in reality, there are many different kinds. Archaea are another group of unicellular organisms that evolved, along with bacteria, several billion years ago. Many are extremophiles, meaning that they thrive in very hot or very acidic conditions. Archaea are more closely related to eukaryotes than to bacteria. Eukaryotic microorganisms are a structurally diverse group that includes protists, algae, and fungi. They all have a nucleus and membrane-bound organelles, as well as other key differences from bacteria and archaea. All the rest of the multicellular organisms on Earth, including humans, have eukaryotic cells as well. Along with the many eukaryotic microorganisms, the eukaryotes include all multicellular life on Earth, like plants, animals, and humans. Viruses are smaller than bacteria and are not technically alive on their own. They must infect a host cell to survive. Viruses are made up of some genetic material surrounded by a viral coat, but they lack all the machinery necessary to make proteins and catalyze reactions. This group also includes subviral particles and prions, which are the simplest of life forms, made of naked ribonucleic acid, RNA, or simply protein. Tip: the bacteria and archaea are often talked about together under the heading of prokaryotes because they lack a nucleus. They do share a few characteristics and aren't easily distinguished from one another at first, but they are distinct groups. Deconstructing microbiology. Microbiology involves studying microorganisms from many different angles. Each perspective uses a different set of tools from an ever-improving and changing toolbox. These include morphology, the study of the shape of cells. It is analyzed using stains and microscopy. Metabolism, how an organism gets energy from its environment and the waste it produces as a result. Metabolism is studied using principles from biochemistry. Growth, how an organism, grows. The growth of a microbe is used to see how quickly the population can divide and help to distinguish between one microbe and another. Growth is measured using principles of physics, as well as good old-fashioned counting. Qualitative measures of how growth looks are also important. Genotype, the genetic makeup of a microbial strain. Genes are studied using genetics, which has recently begun to involve a lot of molecular biology. Phenotype, the name of the observable traits of a microbe. A phenotype is due to the interaction between the constellation of genes and environmental factors. It's used to describe a microorganism and to study the function of genes. To measure a phenotype, you have to use some microbiology know-how to see changes in growth and metabolism, as well as other biochemical processes for communication and defense. Phylogeny. The history of the evolution of microorganisms. Phylogeny is important not only because it helps us identify newly discovered microbes, but also because it allows us to see how closely related different microbes are to one another. The study of a group's phylogeny involves genetics and molecular biology, as well as evolutionary biology. When you put all the pieces back together again, you have the science of microbiology. Microbiologists are some of the most creative scientists out there. They have many tools at their disposal that they can use in a variety of ways. The trick is to think up sneaky ways to study microbes, which is why the field is always evolving. Technical stuff. The term microbiology is often used to mean the study of mainly bacteria and archaea, because the study of other microbes are specialties of their own. For example, the study of viruses is virology, the study of fungi is mycology, and the study of algae is phycology. Chapter 2. Microbiology, the Young Science. In this chapter, remembering a time before microbiology. Discovering microorganisms step by step. Looking forward. Compared with other more ancient fields of science, microbiology is a relative baby. Physics began in ancient times, mathematics even earlier. But the knowledge of tiny living things, their biology, and their impact on human lives has only been around since the late 19th century. Until about the 1880s, people still believed that life could form out of thin air and that sickness was caused by sins or bad odors. As with other fields in science, there are two aspects to microbiology research, basic and applied. Basic microbiology is about discovering the fundamental rules governing the microbial world and studying all the variety of microbial life and microbial systems. Applied microbiology is more about solving a problem and involves using microbes and their genes or proteins for practical purposes, such as in industry and medicine. In this chapter, we introduce the key concepts and experiments that gave rise to the discovery of microbes and their importance in disease. This chapter also highlights the many different areas of study within microbiology and some advances and challenges in the prevention and treatment of infectious diseases. Before microbiology, misconceptions and superstitions. Medical practices in ancient times were all heavily tinged with supernatural beliefs. Ancient Egypt was ahead of its time in terms of medicine, with physicians performing surgery and treating a wide variety of conditions. Medicine in India was also quite advanced. Ancient Greek physicians were concerned with balancing the body's humors. The four distinct body fluids that they believed were responsible for health when in balance, or disease when out of balance. And medicine in medieval Europe was based on this tradition. None, however, had knowledge of the microbial causes of disease. Opinions about why diseases afflicted people differed between cultures and parts of society, and the treatments differed as well. Diseases were thought to be caused by bad smells, treated by removing or masking the offending odor, an imbalance in the humors of the body, treated with bleeding, sweating, and vomiting, sins of the soul, treated with prayer and rituals. Although the concept of contagion was known, it wasn't attributed to tiny living creatures, but to bad odors or spirits, such as the devil. So, simple measures such as removing sources of infection or washing hands or surgical equipment were simply not done. Discovering microorganisms. Before microorganisms were discovered, life was not known to arise uniquely from living cells. Instead, It was thought to spring spontaneously from mud and lakes, or anywhere with sufficient nutrients in a process called spontaneous generation. This concept was so compelling that it persisted until late into the 19th century. Robert Hooke, a 17th century English scientist, was the first to use a lens to observe the smallest unit of tissues he called cells. Soon after, the Dutch amateur biologist Anton van Leeuwenhoek observed what he called animalcules with the use of his homemade microscopes. When microorganisms were known to exist, most scientists believed that such simple life forms could surely arise through spontaneous generation. So, when they heated a container, placed a nutrient broth, a mixture of nutrients that supported growth of microorganisms in these early experiments, in the container and then sealed it, and no microorganisms appeared, they believed it had to be due to the absence of either air or the vital force, whatever that was, necessary to make life. Debunking the myth of spontaneous generation. The concept of spontaneous generation was finally put to rest by the French chemist Louis Pasteur in an inspired set of experiments involving a goose-necked flask. When he boiled broth in a flask with a straight neck and left it exposed to air, organisms grew. When he did this with his goose-necked flask, nothing grew. The S shape of this second flask trapped dust particles from the air, preventing them from reaching the broth. By showing that he could allow air to get into the flask, but not the particles in the air, Pasteur proved that it was the organisms in the dust that were growing in the broth. This is the principle behind the Petri dish, used to grow bacteria on solid growth medium, made by adding a gelling material to the broth, which allows air, but not small particles, to reach the surface of the growth medium. Remember, the idea that invisible microorganisms are the cause of disease is called germ theory. This was another of the important contributions of Pasteur to microbiology. It emerged not only from his experiments disproving spontaneous generation, but also from his search for the infectious organism, typhoid, that caused the death of three of his daughters. Around the same time that Pasteur was doing his experiments, a doctor named Robert Koch was working on finding the causes of some very nasty animal diseases, first anthrax, and then tuberculosis. He devised a strict set of guidelines, named Koch's postulates, that are still used to this day to definitively prove that a microorganism causes a particular disease. Koch's four postulates are: the organism causing the disease can be found in sick individuals, but not in healthy ones. The organism can be isolated and grown in pure culture. The organism must cause the disease when it is introduced into a healthy animal. The organism must be recovered from the infected animal and shown to be the same as the organism that was introduced. Improving medicine, from surgery to antibiotics and more. Once scientists knew that microbes cause disease, it was only a matter of time before medical practices improved dramatically. Surgery used to be as dangerous as not doing anything at all. But once aseptic, sterile, technique was introduced, recovery rates improved dramatically. Hand-washing and quarantine of infected patients reduced the spread of disease and made hospitals into a place to get treatment instead of a place to die. Vaccination was discovered before germ theory, but it wasn't fully understood until the time of Pasteur. In the late 18th century, milkmaids who contracted the non-lethal cowpox sickness from the cows they were milking were spared in deadly smallpox outbreaks that ravaged England periodically. The physician, Edward Jenner, used pus from the cowpox scabs to vaccinate people against smallpox. Years later, Pasteur realized that the reason this worked was that the cowpox virus was similar enough to the smallpox virus to kickstart an immune response that would provide a person with long-term protection, or immunity. Antibiotics were discovered completely by accident in the 1920s, when a solid culture in a petri dish, called a plate, of bacteria was left to sit around longer than usual. As will happen with any food source left sitting around, it became moldy, growing a patch of fuzzy fungus. The colonies in the area around the fungal colony were smaller in size and seemed to be growing poorly compared to the bacteria on the rest of the plate. The compound found to be responsible for this antibacterial action was named penicillin. The first antibiotic, penicillin, was later used to treat people suffering from a variety of bacterial infections and to prevent bacterial infections in burn victims, among many other applications. After bacteria were discovered, the field of molecular biology made great strides in understanding the genetic code, how DNA is regulated, and how RNA is translated into proteins. Until this point, research was focused mainly on plant and animal cells, which are much more complex than bacterial cells. When researchers switched to studying these processes in bacteria, many of the secrets of genes and enzymes started to reveal themselves. Technical stuff. How microorganisms are named. Microorganisms are named using the Linnaeus system developed in the 18th century. It uses two-part Latin names for all living things. The first part, which is capitalized, is a genus name given to closely related organisms. The second part is a species name, which is not capitalized, given to define a specific organism. This is more challenging than you may think, even for plants and animals, and the concept of a species of microorganism is a slippery one. When the complete genus and species name for an organism has been introduced, it can be referred to by only the first letter of the genus with the complete species name after it. For example, Escherichia coli is abbreviated as E. coli, but both are always italicized. Looking at microbiology outside the human body. Two important microbiologists helped shape our understanding of the microbial world outside the human body and gave rise to modern-day environmental microbiology. Dutch microbiologist Martinus Beijerinck was the first to use enrichment culture, specialized chemical mixtures that allow specific organisms to grow, to capture environmental bacteria that weren't easy to grow under normal laboratory conditions. An important example is Azotobacter, which is a nitrogen-fixing bacterium grown in conditions until then thought to be insufficient for life because they contained only nitrogen gas, N2, as the sole nitrogen source. Russian microbiologist Sergei Vinogradsky described sulfur-oxidizing bacteria called Begetua from a hot spring. It was this discovery that convinced the field of microbiology that some microbes get energy from inorganic compounds like hydrogen sulfide, H2S, a microbial lifestyle called chemolithotropy. The future of microbiology. Today is perhaps the best time in history to be a microbiologist. The development of new experimental techniques and ability to sequence organisms without actually culturing them in the laboratory first has revealed diversity and complexity in the microbial world not previously known. Most microorganisms can't be grown in the lab, so they were previously unknown before the development of DNA sequencing techniques. Exploiting this microbial biodiversity for drug discovery and biotechnology applications is an exciting area of research. With the widespread availability of antibiotics and vaccines in the last half of the 20th century, infectious diseases were thought to be under control. The emergence of antibiotic resistance and the rapid evolution of bacterial and viral pathogens have made medical microbiology an urgent and exciting field of science. Exciting frontiers. It's an exciting time for microbiology because the tools available.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?